Today she Masechet Ksubos Daf Kuf Beis. We will begin on Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Beis at the new Perek. Says the Mishnah, Noisus Isha, if somebody marries a woman, Uposki Ma Kedei Shiyozin Espita Chomei Shonim, and he made an agreement with this woman that he's going to support her daughter that she had from a previous marriage for 5 years. So the halach is chayiv lezayin chamesh shanim. He has to support her for 5 years, as the rishonim point out. He has to support her for 5 years, even if, and those 5 years begin immediately. As soon as the deal is made, he has to begin supporting the 5 years. He doesn't have to wait. He can't push it off. The Chochma Shleima says that's why the Mishnah uses the words hanoisa esa isha. Obviously, somebody gets married to a woman. It's her Isha. This is a woman who already was once an Isha. She was once married, and that's why she has this daughter. Or another pshat that he says is, she must be a very special woman that her husband is so anxious to marry her that he's willing to undertake this responsibility of supporting her daughter. Nisus la'achar, if that marriage ends, and she now gets married to another individual, and again, this woman, to her next husband, makes, this is already her third husband, makes the same deal that the husband has to support her daughter 5 years. So he too has to take on this responsibility. The first husband has no right to say, I'll support her when she's in my home. He has to send the mezonos, the support, l'makom she'ima, where her mother is and she is. V'chein l'yoymu shneim. Our Mishnah goes on to discuss that the two husbands perhaps should talk to each other, make up. Harei anu zayna oisayke echad. We'll support it together. I'll give 50% and you'll give 50%. The halacha is echad zayna. They both have a full-fledged obligation to support her, but you could only eat breakfast once. So one supports her, and the other one gives the value of the support. Interesting shaila in the Rishonim. What will be the halacha if both marriages terminate? So now the stepdaughter has two people who have to support her, and the mother's married to neither of them. Which of the two husbands gives the support, and which of the two husbands gives the value of the support? So some Rishonim say the second husband gives the support, and the first husband is the one that will give the cash value. Others say that the daughter has a right to choose which one she wants the food from and which one she wants the money from. Nisus, if this girl, during this period that there's an obligation to support her, gets married, so the halach is habal noisin lamezoinus. Her husband supports her. And like the Rishonim explained, and this is an important concept they say, the obligation of a husband to support a wife is under all circumstances. So the husband can't take the position, my wife doesn't need my support. She has these deals that were made by her mother on her behalf. A husband has to support his wife. Nis is habal noisin lamezoinus. The hey noisin loy demei mezoinus. But the obligation hasn't been abolished, and therefore these stepfathers have to support him. Mesu, if the stepfathers pass away, b'neiseyem nizoynois b'nechosem b'necharim. As we've learned earlier, a father's daughters, as long as the ketanim, get supported from his estate. But they only get supported from properties which are b'necharim. However, because, as we've learned, these are conditions, the Tanai Ksuba only give them mezoinus from Nechasim Necharim. However, this girl is a typical Baalas Chayiv. And just like the Nechasim HaMushibodim are used to pay off the creditors, she's no different than any other creditor. And therefore, this girl, Nechasim Nechasim HaMushibodim, Neshika Baalas Chayiv, she's like any creditor that has a right to collect from Nechasim HaMushibodim. There are interesting shailas in the Rishonim in understanding this halacha. One Shailai saw is, what will be the halacha if this girl passes away during the 5-year period? Does the obligation to support continue to her yarshim? The Ritva at the beginning wants to say that it should, but then at the end the Ritva says that the obligation is from just to the girl, not to her yarshim. Another shaila the Paiskim discuss is that what is included in panasa? Certainly food to eat is included in the panasa, but is refuah, doctor bills included? So the Rishonim say that doctor bills are typically not included. There is a Pesachei Tshuva that wants to say that if somebody undertakes to support somebody forever, then doctor bills are included. And the Mefarshim explain, because if somebody undertakes to support somebody for a limited time, so hopefully during that time he won't be sick, and he didn't undertake to pay for medical bills. On the other hand, a person to live his whole life without ever being sick is unlikely, and therefore if you undertook to support for life, you would be responsible. But again, it seems that the Pesachei Tshuva and most Paiskim say that medical bills are not included in the obligation support. The Rishonim go on to explain that when is this girl considered like a Baal Choyv, and that she's allowed to get, and that she collects even from the Chosim Shvadim, that's like the case of our Mishnah, where the stipulation was for a certain amount of years. But if the stepfather undertook to support her forever, then she would not be able to collect from the Chosim Shvadim. Says the Mishnah, Hapichim, so a smart person who enters this deal and knows that things could change, they would make the stipulation, yes, we'll support your daughter, but only as long as we're married. If the marriage terminates, then my obligation to support your daughter also ends. And as Rishonim explained, if he undertook to support her for 5 years with this stipulation, the marriage terminates, even though if they get remarried, that won't resurrect that original stipulation, and once the marriage terminates, the requirement terminates. There's a very nice pshat. Why does the Mishnah call them pichim? Posh pshat, the Rishonim explain pichim, is because obviously anybody that entered this obligation only did it as long as they're married. But a smart person doesn't just rely on what he's thinking. A smart person articulates what he's thinking. And if he doesn't articulate what he's thinking, he's going to have to pay, even though he never intended to pay under those circumstances. Along the same line, I saw the Mefarshim explain very beautifully. Rashi, very famous Rashi, says, Kairich, calls Kairich Shepikei Chaya. Kairich, that was such a wise man, Maral L'shtosu. How did he make this error of getting to an argument with Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Mefarshim asks, where do we know that Kairich was a Pikeach? So the answer, if we look at Kairach's words, what were Kairach's words? Ki kol ha'eda kulam kadoshim. If we look at Kairach's words, they're sort of redundant. Kol ha'eda kulam. He's saying kol twice. But that's the pshat is a smart person. A smart person, like our Mishnah says, is very clear and articulate in expressing what he has on his mind. And actually, there's a taz that says the same concept. Yom and the Roim in the Tefillah we say Meloich al kol ha'olam kulay b'chvaydecha. So again the question is kol ha'olam kulay. Why do we say kol twice? Says the Taz, we want to be so clear in our Tefillah, so we would just say kol ruba kakulam. We maybe can mean only most of the world. So we want to be clear, so we say kol ha'olam, but not Roiv, not the majority of the world. Kulay, again a pikeach is clear in what he has to say. There are a number of interesting shailas and halacha that are based on this Mishnah. The Ramah, the Beis Yosef, Paskin. Let's say someone undertook to support someone else for life. There was somebody who is a needy person, and I undertook I'm going to support him. And then, Baruch Hashem, that person's fortune changes and he becomes wealthy. Does my obligation continue or not? So Beis Yosef and Ramah say, if his fortune changes, my obligation no longer exists. The Shach and the Sma say it matters. If when I undertook the obligation, the person was wealthy, So it doesn't make a difference if he got wealthier. If, however, when I undertook the obligation, the person was poor, and then the situation changed, then they say that the obligation is no longer there. Ask the Taz from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that this person undertook to support his daughter because he's support this woman's daughter because he's marrying her. That's very clear. It's only because he's marrying her mother. But the Mishnah says it doesn't make a difference. Even if the marriage ends, unless he stipulated otherwise, he still has the obligation. So all of the shittas are difficult to understand, ask the Taz. So the Chacham Tzvi gives two answers to the Taz's question. One answer is that, based on what we said in the Mishnah, in our Mishnah, the stipulation is a limited amount of years, 5 years. When somebody made a stipulation for a certain amount of years, the halacha is he has to follow the, when somebody made that obligation, he has to follow it under all circumstances. In the case that we discussed, he undertook to support for life. So we can't compare the two situations. That's one difference. Another difference the Chacham Tzvi says is as follows. In our Mishnah, where one undertook to support the wife, to support the daughter, there was a transaction. She's willing to marry him. And for that, he has to undertake to support her daughter. So there was a give and take. There was, each side gave something. But when somebody undertakes to support someone, he's not receiving anything in return. And therefore, if that person's situation changes, his obligation ends. Which leads to interesting shaila that I saw the Paiskim discuss. There was a father-in-law who undertook to support his daughter and son-in-law. And then, his son-in-law was learning in yeshiva, Kailo. And then his daughter got a very good job, a very well-paid job, and they don't really need the support. But the son-in-law is saying, that doesn't make any difference. Our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that, our Mishnah says that if you take an obligation, the obligation is there no matter what. What's the halacha in that case? So it really depends on the two answers of the Chacham Tzvi. If the obligation was forever, so the Chacham Tzvi says, if the situation changed, the obligation changed. But if we follow the teretz of the Chacham Tzvi, that there was something given and taken, here the son-in-law took his daughter for a wife, so obviously the obligation remains under all circumstances. Which leads to another interesting shaila I saw. The shailas may happen. Where a father-in-law, in Etzisrael, a father-in-law promised to buy his son-in-law and daughter a home, a dira, an apartment. And they got married, and after 2 years, the daughter died. And he had never bought the apartment. The son-in-law comes to the father-in-law, he says, that obligation is still here. So we learned earlier in the Masech, the Rabbeinu Tam says that the obligation from the dunya, if the daughter dies within the first year, we learned that the Rabbeinu Tam says you don't have to pay the obligation. But here was after the first year. What's the halacha? So the Paiskim seem to say the following. If the father had already bought the apartment and given it to them, and even though the marriage ended so soon because Nebuch, she died, he could hold on to the apartment. If the father did not buy the apartment yet, there are many Paiskim said that he's not obligated to buy the apartment. And one of the reasons they give is because he had promised to buy the couple an apartment. There's no couple, unfortunately, anymore. But one more interesting shaila. This goes back to a Taz. The Taz says the following situation. He says there was a couple that got married. But here was the other way around. The Chassan's father had agreed to support. And then, after 2 years, the husband passed away. Does the father of the chassan have to continue supporting the daughter-in-law? So the Taz says that the psak that was given is that he doesn't have to, but he doesn't understand. Our Mishnah says if you take on an obligation, the obligation is there under all circumstances. Says the Or Sameach, the case is different via from our Mishnah. He says an interesting pshat. He says a husband has an obligation to support a wife. A father wants to help his son fulfill that obligation. So when the father of the chassan agreed to support, what he was doing was he was trying to help his son. His son dies, so that's no longer, he's not trying to help his son anymore. Unfortunately, his son is no longer alive. In the case of our Mishnah, this mother of the girl doesn't have an obligation to support her daughter. The obligation to support children is on the father, not on the mother. So when the husband is agreeable to support this woman's daughter, it's not because he wants to help his wife. It's because he agreed to support her. And therefore, it has nothing to do with her mother. And even if the marriage ends, the obligation remains. Says the Gemara, Hi'itmar. In this way, Rashi explains the Gemara. Reuven approaches Shimon and says, I owe you $100. And of course, if Reuven wants to give Shimon $100, he can. The question, however, in our Gemara is, will this be considered a full-fledged obligation? So Rabbi Yochanan Mechayif, Rabbi Yochanan says that it is considered an obligation, Rish Lakish HaMapotam. Ask the Gemara, Hechidam, exactly what is the situation that's being referred to here? Ida Amalei Atam Eidai, if Reuven designates witnesses and says in front of those witnesses, I owe Shimon money, my time to Rish Lakish to Kapotar, how could anybody say that he's not obligated? Ida Loi Amalei Atam Eidai, on the other hand, if there were no witnesses designated, my time to Rabbi Yochanan Mechayif, just because I say I owe you money, it doesn't mean anything, because as Tosfos explains, a lot of times people tease other people. So I come over to you and I tell you I owe you money, but it doesn't really mean anything, I'm just teasing you. Or another pshat Tosfos says, I'll go over to you and I'll tell you I owe you a lot of money. So the people who are sitting here say, oh wow, he must be a person that does big business, he owes money, back and forth. But I'm just trying to show off, it doesn't really mean anything. So everybody will agree that that's meaningless. So again, what is the situation the Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are disagreeing in? Says the Gemara, Delaylam Delay Kamalo Eretam Edom. He did not designate witnesses. V'achim Maiskinen, what is the case that they're arguing over? Domla Chayv Ani Monach Bishtar. So Rashi explains, a person writes in a unsigned document, I owe you money. And as Rashi points out, if I signed the document, it's a full-fledged obligation. Moreover, say to Rishonim in Rashi, if I wrote out my name, I, Moshe Elephant, owe you, whoever, money, that's a full-fledged obligation. Here, I just wrote, I owe you money, and I gave it to you in front of witnesses. So we have a weak shtar, but we have witnesses. How do we view this shtar? Rav Yochanan Mechayif, Rav Yochanan says that's considered an obligation. Alima milsa de shtara, command amalam atam eidim dami. We have a weak document given over in front of witnesses that give it a strength. And Rish Lakish HaMapater, he says once you're starting with a weak document, nothing can help you. Loim alima milsa de shtara, that shtar cannot be supported just because that shtar can't be supported by the fact that you gave it in front of witnesses. Says the Gemara Tanan, we just learned in our Mishnah, Hanoi Sisi Isha, if somebody marries a woman, or Paski Ima Lozen, Espita Chamashonim, and he obligates to support her daughter for 5 years, Chayiv Zayna Chamashonim. She has to support her. My love, Kai Gavna. So as the Rishonim explained the Gemara's question, if our Mishnah is referring to a situation where I wrote a full-fledged, perfectly valid document obligating me to support this girl, do I need a Mishnah to tell me that I have to fulfill my obligation? Obviously, if it's a full-fledged shtar, I have to fulfill my obligation. It must be, says the Gemara, that the case of our Mishnah is that it's a weak shtar. It's an unsigned document that was given in front of Edom, and our Mishnah is teaching us, like Reb Yochanan, that it's still considered an obligation. Says the Gemara Loi, our Mishnah is referring to Shtari Psikta. Shtari Psikta are documents that were written between Mechutanim which indicate what each party is going to give in the marriage. Ukrav Gidl, Gomer Av Gidl Amarav, Kamata Nois Labincha, if as the Mechutanim sit down and the Kala's father asked the Chassan's father, how much are you going to give to your son? How much are you giving? And he says, kach v'kach, this is what I'm prepared to give. The kama atanais l'bitcha, and how much are you going to give for your daughter? Kach v'kach. Even though they didn't do a kinyan, and we know that typically a kinyan is required, imdu v'kitshu, kanu. This is enough. So the shtari psikta are different than all other shtaris. A shtar normally to be valid requires a kinyan. Here a kinyan is not required, and that's why our Mishnah, Heinein Dvarim HaNiknim Amira. Just the obligation, the verbal obligation is enough. Now there's a Machloikas HaChroinim, why this shtar psikta doesn't require a kinyan. Noida Behuda says, it's a special Takonis Chazal, that they made as part of the marriage process, you don't need to have a kinyan. Chazanish says a very interesting pshat. It's a very fundamental pshat in Hilchus Kinyonim. The Chazanish says, why is a kinyan typically required? Why when I enter in transaction with you do I need to do a kinyan? Because doing a kinyan represents finality. Doing a kinyan represents that I'm serious in entering this transaction. Says the Chazanish, when two fathers sit down to talk about their children getting married, the satisfaction that they find at that moment that the Baruch Shem able to marry off their children makes a finality of the kinyan, and therefore it doesn't require any formal kinyan. What would be a nafkamina between the two pshatim, between the Noida Yehuda and the Chazanish? There's a machlaikis hapaiskim if Rav Gidl's din applies to Kedushin only or even to Nesun. According to the Chazanish's approach, because that's what getting married is all about, so it doesn't make a difference by Kedushin or Nesun. If we're going to learn it's a special Takonis Chazal, it could be Chazal only made this Takonah by Kedushin, not by Nesun. In fact, many Poskim say that this is the basis why the Shtar Tanoim, in the places where people write Tanoim, work. Because the Shtar Tanoim, if we don't make a kinyan, most people do make a kinyan when they write Tanoim. But if you don't make Tanoim, the Shulchan Aruch still said kinyan, the Tanoim would work. Why? Where's the kinyan? What's happening here? So they explain, it's our Gemara of Gidl, because the Tanoim represent this beautiful marriage and this getting together, that you don't have to have a kinyan. There's a beautiful, beautiful vart from the Darkei Tshuva on this Gemara, worth repeating. He says, Amrav Gidla Marav, Kama Ata Nois Labincha, B'chotanam Mit, Baruch Hashem. And the Kala's father asks the Chassan's father, how much are you prepared to give? So he says, Kach, Kach, whatever he says. The Kama Ata Nois Labincha, and the Chassan's father asks the Kala's father, how much are you prepared? He says, Kach, Kach. And Imdu V'Kitshu, and each side satisfies with what the other side says. They don't start saying, no, you should give more. They don't start pressing the mechatanim to give more. Hein hein dvarim ha'niknim b'amira. This was a marriage by Mira that was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was 40 days before Yetzirah Havlad. This is the shidduch that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants when the two mechatanim don't press each other for financial situations. Toshma, says the Gemara, Kasav l'kayin. The Mishnah says in Masech de Bechayris, if one writes to a Kohen, Shani Chayev L'cha Shama Sloim, I'm obligated to give you Chama Sloim, Chayev, and he happens to have a son who's a Bechor, so the Halacha is Chayev Litin Lai Chama Sloim, the father has this obligation to give Chama Sloim, Ubna and a Padri. But that has nothing to do with his obligation for Pinyon Aben. So the Gemara is learning that what kind of obligation did he undertake? The obligation of our case, where he had this unsigned shtar. And yet we see it's considered an independent obligation like Rabbi Yochanan. Says the Gemara, that Rish Lakish will tell us, Shani Hasan the Meshumbe the Raisa. There it's different, because he already has an obligation for Pinyan Aben. Ask the Gemara, Yochanan and Mike Kosov. If he has this obligation, so why is he writing the shtar? Says the Gemara, the whole point of the shtar is Kedei Levaro LeKoyin. He wrote the shtar to say that I'm choosing this coin to be the coin that will receive the money of the Pidyon HaBen. Ask the Gemara, if so, why is it not considered Pidyon HaBen? Why does he have to give separate Chomis Sloim for the Pidyon HaBen? And it says the Gemara, Ula. Dama Ula Dvatar Padui, L'chshitin. Midaraisa, it should be sufficient. Umay tam amru b'noyin epadu. Why do we say that he has to give another chomei sloim? Gzeirah shem yoyim epadu b'shtaris. The halacha is that to affect the pinyan aben, we can't give a shtar. And this is the way the shach explains the halacha. Let's say someone owes me money. Somebody owes me chomei sloim. And I have a son to be paida. And so I go, and I give the kain this IOU. And when my loiva will pay, you got your chomei sloim. The halacha is that that pinyan aben is invalid. Why? The Marit al-Ghazi explains it this way. He explains because that's not really being paid l'shem pinyan aben. It's a payment to satisfy debt. And the payment of a pinyan aben is to pay l'shem pinyan aben. Here, when I'm giving the shtar to the kohen, so even though it's a shtar that I wrote, I owe you, so that consideration is not there, still Chazal said we should never use a shtar to affect the pinyan aben. In fact, there's a very interesting machloikis, Chazanish Chsam Sofer. We know that we try to use real 5 silver coins to do a pinyan aben. But what would be the halacha if it's difficult or one uses cash, dollar bills, to affect the pinyan aben? Would it be effective or not? What's the shaila? The shaila is, how do you look at a dollar bill? Is a dollar bill essentially a currency? That's what the Chazanish says. But Chsam Sofer says a dollar bill is not really currency. Currency means a coin that has in it the value of the currency in it. A silver coin has value of silver in it. A dollar bill has no value. It's a piece of shmata. It represents an obligation that the government stands behind that this is worth 100 pennies. And therefore, the Chasam Sofer says that even with the Evid, one cannot use paper money to affect a pinyan aben because it's like poydim b'shtaris. Amar Rava. Ketanoi. This machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Shlokes, perhaps is machlokes tanoim. There's a Gemara that says, Masech de Gittin, Arav Hayotzev Achis Mishtaris. There's a full-fledged loan document that says Reuven owes Shimon $100. And there are Adam signed on that document. And below the signature of the documents, it says, the I Levi, I'm a guarantor to this loan. So the halach is, Goyvim Mechosim, Bnei Chayrin. You could only go to the Bnei Chayrin of the guarantor, not to the Mishabodim. Why? Because then those witnesses signed under the guarantee. And the halacha is that without witnesses, you can never collect from Mishabodim. Why? It's important to review. Because when witnesses sign on a document, it gives it a call. It makes everybody aware of what's happening here. And therefore, whoever buys property knows that this person has a lien on it. Without witnesses, there's no call, and nobody's aware of it. Says the Gemara, Mas Bal Lefnei Rav Shmuel, and such a situation came to Rav Shmuel, V'am Agavim Menchosim Nechayrin, but not from Mishabotim. Omla Bananas, Bananas disagreed with Rav Shmuel. And he says, En Agavim Loimim Menchosim Nechayrin, V'loim Menchosim Mishabotim. You can't collect any type of property. Omla Lomaloi. So Rav Shmuel asked Bananas, why? Omaloi. If I see somebody squeezing my friend, not squeezing here is not physically, squeezing him for money. So I want to get you out of trouble. So I tell the person that's squeezing you for the money, I'll take care of you. I didn't really mean, I just wanted to save you. Here too, taking and writing under a signed document, I guaranteed a loan, means nothing. So the Gemara wants to say, what's the machlokes? Rabbi Shmuel that says that writing that I am the guarantor of this loan and giving it over in front of witnesses is considered an obligation, is like Rabbi Yochanan said. Like I said, that if I write, I owe you money and give it in front of witnesses, it's considered a document. Reish Lakish, Tamaka Ben Anas, which as we explained in the previous year would be a difficulty to say that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have the same machlokes as the machlokes Tanon. Says the Gemara, leave it Bananas kulam lepligi. Reish Lakish, Bananas and Reish Lakish are together. Rav Yochanan has no way to understand Bananas' opinion. The Shaila is ki pligi leader of Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan clearly holds, like Rabbi Shmuel, that signing something and giving it over in front of witnesses does create an obligation. Resh Lakish is going to tell us, at Kan Lekom Rabbi Shmuel Hassam. You know why by a guarantor, him saying, I am a guarantor on this loan, and presenting it in front of people, it creates an obligation. El Deshayach L'Shibudu D'Raisa. And the Rishonim explain, guaranteeing something has a basis in the Torah. Where? In the Parsha. Yehuda says to Yaakov, Anochi Aravena. So we see that the Torah created this obligation of a guarantor. And therefore, it's a very strong obligation. It's a very strong obligation that even Reish Lakish, who typically says that if somebody just writes something unsigned and presents it in front of witnesses doesn't mean much, here it has a lot of validity. Avahocha, in a situation where I just obligate myself, L'shayach Shibudu D'Raisa, and therefore Reish Lakish holds that just so, presenting a document like this unsigned doesn't really have much meaning. Gufa, the Gemara continues, Amar of Gidla Marav, Kamat and Nois Labincha, we learned the Gemara just a few moments ago, how much are you giving for your son, Kach V'Kach, the Kamat and Nois Labincha, Kach V'Kach, Imdu V'Kitshu, and then they get Mekudoshim Konu. It's considered as if there was a Kenyan, and Hein Hein, Devarim Hamnikra, Bamira. This, even though it wasn't formal Kenyan, it's considered as if there was a Kenyan. Another pshat, Chassidus Sfarim, Tver Shloima, says this pshat in this Gemara. Nach is full of obligations and promises that Kadosh Baruch Hu makes to Klal Yisrael about a wonderful situation that we will have. Says the Gemara, Kamat Anoisim Labincha. We are considered the sons and daughters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kamat Anois Labincha. We say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how much you promised so much. Kamat Anois Labincha Kach V'Kach. You've promised so much to your daughters. Amdu V'Kotshu. As soon as we will be Mekadosh ourselves, as soon as we will do what we're supposed to do, Hein Hein Dvar Ma'anik Ma'mira. Immediately all of those promises will be fulfilled. Amar Rava. Mestaber Milsa, the Rav. This the Rav says that no formal kinyan is required, is bebitoy nara, is where the girl is a nara, the kamata hanol yode, where the girl's father, as we've learned so many times in this mesecta, receives the kes of kedushin. So therefore, since he's receiving the kes of kedushin, that's why there's no requirement for a kinyan. Avol begeris, where the girl is begeris, that we've learned that the girl's father, under those circumstances, does not receive the kes of kedushin, the loy mata hanala yade, so he doesn't really enjoy any tangible benefit, loy. There the halacha will be that you have to have a formal kinyan. For lakim, he swears by the name of Hashem, Omer Rav Afilu Begeris. It's not true. Even by Begeris, there's no formal requirement for kinyan. And Ritva says an unbelievable vort. He says, Rava lived many, many years after Rav. Rav was from the earliest Amoraim. Rava was from the latest Amoraim. So how could Rava swear that Rav said differently? He never heard Rav. Says the Ritva, Rava was so certain that if somebody is so certain that the person that's being quoted was being quoted wrong, he could even make a shvua, even though he didn't hear it himself. And that's why Rava, even though he personally never heard Rav, but he was certain that Rav never said it, and he could make even a shvua to it. V'lekim amar Rav, afil begeris. Rav says that even if the girl's begeris, there's no requirement for a kinyan. Dilei temahachi, and I'll prove it to you, says Rava. Avia ben mahanos liyadei. The boy's father never receives anything. Makes no difference what age he is. Because the boy is the one that gives the money, doesn't receive the money. So we see it has nothing to do with receiving something. What is the basis for Rav Gidla Meram's halacha that there's no requirement for a kinyan? But here nor the kamechatni hadadi, because there's such a wonderful situation that this home is being built between the Chos and the Kala, Gamri Amakni Ladodi, that affects the Kinyan. So I saw very Shafart. The Gemara says that there's such Gevaldig Hano between the two sides that obviates the needs for a Kinyan. So Mefarshim asks, the Chatanim don't always get along. What do we say? The Vahi Hano, that they're so happy with each other. Mechatanim are always so happy with each other. So they say the Hanoahs, they say it's the Mechatanim aren't the ones that have to be happy. The Chas and Kala have to be happy. But he Hanoah, the Kamechatni Hadodi, the Hanoah that the Chas and Kala are happy, and that they together are going to be happy, the fact that the Mechatanim aren't happy isn't what's important. The children have to be happy, and that's what makes that there's no requirement for a Kenyan. Amalei Ravina Larvashi. Dvarm halolam nitnu l'kasev, alay nitnu l'kasev. As Rashi explains the Gemara's question, they undertake this obligation. We're saying that a kinyan is not required. So can we now commit it to writing? Why? What's the Gemara Shaila? So as Rashi explains, because once it's committed to writing, then you can collect from Mushabadim. So now the question is, can we write it or not? Amalei, le'nitme le'kasef. That much, it can't be done. Eisvei asked the Gemara, we just learned in our Mishnah, ha'pichna yukaisam nasha as in aspitka chamishonim. Our Mishnah is referring to the conditions that were set for a time of marriage. And it says that they wrote, and the smart ones we learned at the end of the Mishnah said, ha'yukaisam nasha as in aspitka chamishonim, kozman shan it imi. So you see that they can write it. Says the Gemara, my kaisvin, when the Mishnah used the words kaisvin, it doesn't mean actually writing, it means oimrim, they said it. Ask the Gemara, the korale lamirik siva, the Mishnah uses the word writing, how do you say it means saying? Says the Gemara, in. We find in the Mishnayis that sometimes the word kaisvin means oimrim. Vatanan, as we learn, here Vatanan is not a kasha, here Vatanan is a raya, as we learned in a Mishnah earlier in Amasech, and Dapei Gimel, HaKoysev L'Ishtoi, if a husband writes to his wife, Dinah Dvarm Einli Ben Chosayich, the Taner of Chia, doesn't mean that he has to write it. Hoyme L'Ishtoi. So we see that even though the Mishnah uses the word Koysev, it means Oimer. Here too, it uses the word Koysev, but it means Oimer. But perhaps it cannot be committed to writing, because something that there was no Kinyan over doesn't have the strength that you should be able to write it and collect from Mishabadim. Tashma, en kaisvin shtar erisim nesuin, marriage documents cannot be written, el bedash neim, only with the consent of the chos and the kala. My medash neim, but if the chos and the kala both consent, kaisvin, so he's my love, isn't this brisa speaking about shtar psikta? And we see that shtar psikta can be written if both sides agree. Loi. It's referring to Shtari Eris and Mamish. As no, the first Mishnah Masechta Kedushin teaches us that one of the ways to affect the Kedushin is with a Shtar. That's the Shtar that's being referred to in this Braisa. Kirapapa Rav Shavya, Ditma, Kosvu Lishma Vishloi Ladata. If a marriage document was written with me having in mind that I'm marrying this woman, but without her consent, Rava Vravina Mikudeshus, it's still effective. But we don't have a raya to a shtari psikta, the shtar that refers to the obligations that the two sides obligated themselves. Although the Paiskim do say that even though we're having a discussion here about shtari psikta, shtari erisin, let's discuss different types of shtars. Shtari erisin certainly has to be written with the girl who's getting married in mind. Do we have to have her sent consent or not, we see as a machloikis amaroim. What is the basis of the machloikis amaroim? The maroim that say it has to be with her consent say that doesn't have to have her consent is because the yotz of a haisa, just like a get, doesn't have to have her consent. So two shtari erisin are compared, don't have to have her consent. The other madarim say that this is a kinyan. And since she has to consent to the marriage, the shtar also has to be written with her consent. What about a shtar ksuba? There all the Paiskim agree that a shtar ksuba could be written without the consent of the kala, because the shtar ksuba only obligates him, only obligates the chassan, doesn't obligate the kala, and therefore shtar ksuba could certainly be written without the consent of the kala. It's interesting to note that I saw that the paiskim say that the minig, and many paiskim say this, that the proper minig to follow is that the chass, besides having edim sign the shtar ksuba, the chassan himself should also sign the shtar ksuba to strengthen the obligation therein. Toshma. Nesu, we learnt in our Mishnah, b'neseim nezoinim in chassam nechayim. If the father dies, so his daughters only could collect from the chassam nechayim. For he, however, the stepdaughter, they obligated himself to support for 5 years, he nezoinis mechassam shabadim. B'nei shehi kabalas chayiv. So we see that there must be, it must have been committed to writing. Because if it wouldn't have been committed to writing, as we explained earlier in the shir, there would be no kol. If there's no kol, you can't collect from the chos mishabadim. Says the Gemara, hachem ha'iskinen v'shkona miyadai. Our entire question, if this shtar may be written or not, committed to writing, is in a situation where there was no formal kinyan. And the question is, that even though no formal kinyan is required, does it give him the authority to put it into a shtar? But certainly, if they did make a formal kinyan, they could commit it to a shtar. Says the Gemara, Ihachi Barnes Nami, if there was a formal kinyan, and one made a formal kinyan that is obligated to support his daughters, so then even the daughters should be considered Bali Chayiv, and when the father dies, they should be able to collect from the Chasim Shabadim. Says the Gemara, Vishakana Luzu, Vilaikana Luzu. Our Mishnah is referring that he made a kinyan for a stepdaughter, and not a kinyan for his daughter. Ask the Gemara Pascha, why? How do you know? Where does it say that in our Mishnah? Says the Gemara, different terrors. Ihi, the stepdaughter, to have Bishas kinyan. When he obligated to support his stepdaughter was already born. That was the whole condition in the marriage, that this wife has a daughter that she's obligating her husband to support. And that's why Mahanalei kinyan. Bonos, but his daughters that weren't yet born before the marriage, the La'av B'shas Kinyan, La'mahanya Kinyan. It's a Dovah Shalai Balayulam. Says the Gemara, who says that our Mishnah is only referring to daughters that weren't here when they're getting married? Milay Skinan, can't our Mishnah also be discussing a case, La'av B'shas Kinyan, that his daughters are already there when he obligates himself? Heichidami, Kigayin de Garsha, a man married a woman, they had daughters, divorced the woman, for Hadron, he takes her back. So just like he can make a kinyan for his stepdaughter, he can make a kinyan for his daughter. Ella, says the Gemara, e the lesser, but tonight Bezdin, a stepdaughter is not included in the obligation of the ksuba. E the lesser, but tonight Bezdin, mahanale kinyan. Bonois, this to tonight Bezdin, the daughters who have an obligation anyway because of the tonight Bezdin, le mahanale kinyan. The kinyan wouldn't be effective, says the Gemara Migrigari. It doesn't make any sense. If the daughters, besides his own obligation, there's a tekonis chazal of a tanai bezdin that they have to be supported, so if anything, it should strengthen their position, not weaken their position, says the Gemara El Benois of Hanatama, kiven de istnu b'tanai bezdin, emet sererit v'sinim. And this is the way the Rishonim explain this Gemara. A father has an obligation to support his daughter from the tanai bezdin. So if a man sees that he's about to leave the world, and he wants to fulfill that obligation, he may give his daughter's money already before he passes away. And therefore, we have always that concern, and therefore we don't let the daughters collect from the chasim shabadim. On the other hand, a stepdaughter, he doesn't have that tanai bezdin, and because he doesn't have that tanai bezdin, we don't think that he would have paid him off before he died, and therefore, we allow her to collect from the Chosim Shabbatim. So now that we're trying to ask the obvious question. If we're saying wherever there's a Tanai Bezdin, we're concerned Sroriat Vesinu, that he paid off his obligation before he died, so why aren't we concerned by a wife? That he paid off his Ksubat, his wife, before he died. Why is the Halacha, as we learned so many times in our Masechta, that a wife could collect a Ksubah from the Chosim Shabbatim? So we're trying to say a very simple teretz. It's not just Tanai Bezdin. There's another factor. It's his daughter. A father loves his daughter. there's nobody more that a person loves than his children. So if you combine the Tanai Bezdin with the love that a person has to his daughter, which is greater than his love that he has certainly to his stepdaughter, and frankly even to his wife, that's why by her there's a concern of Tzroriyat V'sinu versus anyone else.
Joey, I want to know how soon you're going to use the back of Chuvah's work.
Back of Chuvah, obviously that's not the mini.
I want to know how soon you're using it.
How soon, what's, how soon, what?